You're listening to the Overeaters Anonymous Mid-Peninsula podcast. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. For more information, please visit oamidpeninsula.org.
All right. Good morning, everybody. My name is Kimberly. I'm a food addict from San Carlos, California. Really excited to be with you today. I definitely qualify to be here. I came in the rooms in 1999 at the age of 26. I weighed about 200 pounds. I was too afraid to get on the scale initially, but I averaged a weight loss because I had the metabolism of a ninja warrior of about 13 pounds a month. So I first weighed in the second month and I weighed 187. And so I just tack on that 13 pounds to get me to the 200 mark. And there's that. And then at last weigh-in, I was 114 and a half pounds. And I've been a normal size body weight now for 22 and a half years. And I love Overeaters Anonymous. I am exceptionally indebted to Overeaters Anonymous. It has changed my whole entire life. It has changed the way I relate to other people, changed the way I think, what I believe, and my attitudes. It also has changed my faith tremendously. And I just came in to lose weight to have a baby. I mean, the rest of it is like an extra, you know, triple scoop of blessings and miracles. And so I'm going to go ahead and share this picture. This is first, this one is of me as a child. There's me. Actually, you might want to see the rest of my siblings. There's me in the white t-shirt. My sister is in the pink tank top. My brother is in the red shirt. And my other brother, who looks nothing like any of us, is in the white tank top. And my dad is in the white t-shirt right behind me. I am standing with my legs apart. Everybody see that? Yeah. Because by that time in 1982, I already felt fat and ugly and unworthy. And my legs always, my thighs always touched. They have always touched. Did I mention they have always touched? Because even at 114 and a half pounds, my thighs still touch. But yet at that age, I was so consumed about being too fat, not good enough. I tried anything and everything I could in my little 8, 9, 10-year-old mind to appear to be as thin as my sister, who was just had a different body shape than I do and still does, because, you know, that doesn't really change all that much. So there's me. And there's a lot of verbal abuse by the eldest brother, and a lot of co-signing by my mom around my size. There was always a, hey, do you want to eat less of that? Because, you know, which was code for, you know, you need to lose weight, or you know, you're a little too big, or you know what the doctor said, or fill in the blank. And this program has taught me that she was doing the best she could. She grew up in a society where how women looked on the outside was very much an indication of their worth and value. So she was just passing on what she was being taught. Now, when I came into the program, I hated her guts, but now I just see that she was doing the best she could. And the same thing with my brother's verbal abuse. My mom wasn't sitting there and saying, oh yes, please, please traumatize my child. Feel free, you know, enjoy it. No, no, no. She couldn't control my oldest brother, no matter what she did anyways. So even if she tried, there would have been nothing she could have done. And I've come to terms with that. And that was a gift and a miracle of this program that I hadn't anticipated, nor did I even really want. I was completely comfortable hating her. But what I really realized I was doing is I was drinking poison and expecting her to die. And so the only one who was really getting harmed was me. So here is my wedding day. There I am. I was about 180 plus pounds in that picture. That was the wedding dress I did not like. I had one made for me because back then to get one from a bridal store in my size was about a boat ton more money than having one made for me. And I did not like my dress. I still don't like my dress, although I did pull it out the other day and recognize that I could almost fit two of me in it. I've never even dry cleaned that dress because why would I dry clean something I don't like? And that was in 1997, I got married. And then I hit a wall. I hit a wall in terms of my weight and what I was eating. And here is me. I'm just going to get close to me. That is me at about 200 pounds. I'm in the red t-shirt. So if anyone doesn't think I'm a food addict or compulsive overeater, there is the proof. And today I'm so grateful and I feel so blessed that I am a food addict because I get to live this way of life that is beyond anything that I would have ever thought possible for myself. And what I mean by that is I'm no longer a victim of any circumstance that I find myself in. And that is so freeing because what I recognize is that I can't change other people, but I can change my perception, my beliefs, my attitudes, and my thoughts. Maybe not the first one, but the rest of them that follow, I can. And how I've learned to do that in this room is through prayer and meditation and working the steps. Because the fourth step has me take inventory about my relationships, about my fears, about my sex inventory, about all of the yuck, right, that's happened in my life that ends up shaping who I am and the faulty belief systems that I've had over the years. And each time I get to really see it in black and white, my selfishness, my self-seeking, my dishonesty, my inconsideration, my impatience, my distrust, my intolerance. And then I get to say, well, how do I want to do life differently? Oh, I want to be more patient. I want to be more tolerant. I want to be more loving. I want to be kinder. And I want to have better relationships. I want to be more communicative. I want to be less fearful. And so that's the work then that I ask my higher power to help me do in steps 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, really, even 11 and 12, right? Because we all work the steps and they all are in sequence for a reason. And those steps help me look at my stuff on a continuous basis. I have, for the first 17 years in program, and this is one of the reasons why I think that I ended up restarting on July, I think it's 11th now, 2017, but I restarted on that day was because I wasn't practicing I wasn't practicing meditation. I wasn't practicing step 11. And that, even though I didn't eat flour and sugar, I didn't overeat, I just made a decision to eat something that I didn't check, didn't have sugar in. And then I ate it and then I checked and it still didn't have sugar in it. And most people are like, Kimberly, why'd you start over? And I said, because it's the thinking and the behavior that wasn't abstinent. And so for me, what I did when I wrote about it, I wrote a letter to God and God wrote back to me. And what I heard was, Kimberly, come and rest in me. Come and rest in me. How many consecutive days in recovery you have doesn't matter.
the person who has the most recovery or who's been abstinent the longest is the one who woke up the earliest this morning, right? And you don't live in India or wherever it is that, like, when I wake up at 7, they've already been awake for 12, 20, 23 hours. They're going to have more abstinence, maybe more abstinence than me because they woke up earlier than me. Recovery has to do with how I'm living my program. And so I didn't know a lot about this. I didn't know that my ego and my pride were tied up in how many days I had of back-to-back abstinence. I didn't get it until I restarted. And then it was like, oh, whoop, there it is. There's my ego right there. Because when I was writing, I also became very, very clear that I'm not going to do anything different tomorrow that I did 2 days ago. It's not like I'm going to go out and binge because I did.
But I am going to call you after 11:15. I'm on a meeting. Okay.
Oh, thanks, Connie. I just lost my train. It went out the went off the track. Any hoops, it'll come back. No worries. So when I grew up a compulsive overeater, I think I was hardwired as a compulsive overeater. Even when I was 2 months old, I couldn't suck on the bottle and breathe at the same time because I was 2.5 months premature. And so they would have to rip the bottle out of my mouth so that I would breathe. And then I was pissed that they ripped the bottle out of my mouth so that I could breathe. Like, what are you doing, dude? And then they'd stick it back in. And then I would like turn colors because I wasn't breathing. And then they'd rip it out. And then it was back and forth and back and forth. And so I just had that reaction to food. I mean, as youngest of four, first one up the stairs when my mom was baking. And back in the day, they let you lick the beaters. I don't know if you're not supposed to do that anymore, by the way. Something about salmonella or some craziness. I'm like, I was absolutely fine. And there were more batches of baked goods that I ate raw than I ever ate baked. So if that doesn't qualify me as a compulsive overeater, I don't know what does. I've eaten a whole box bag carton of things. I left a sleeping baby in a crib to go down to the corner store to get a fix. I have gone to multiple places. Someone said in a meeting right before this one, she's like, yeah, I've been pulled over drunk eating a number of times. And that could have been me because I have drunk eight in my car a gajillion times. The first thing I did when I got my little Volkswagen Bug in 1991 was I took myself to a drive-thru because I could. And all of that ability to eat and hiding in my car was like, I thought I was like in paradise. I thought I had hit the mother load. But then what I recognized was that I hid behind my weight. And then I decided I was done being overweight my senior year of high school. And so I decided the best way to do anything about that was to starve. And so I starved myself for a while. Then I almost crashed that little sweet Volkswagen Bug I had going up Fassler Avenue in Pacifica because there was a big old turn there. And I was too busy about to pass out from over-exercising and not eating. And that scared me and I started eating again. And then I compulsively over-exercised for about 4 years after that till I hurt my back. Because, you know, if I'm going to go do something, I'm going to go do it big, right? So I did it big until I couldn't do it anymore. And so that's how I rolled. And then I got my first full-time job after college and my boss was, difficult. I think that's the best way to put that. And I ate to soothe myself. I would go to the store and buy a box of frozen stuff, stick it in the freezer and then eat one at a time till it was gone by the end of the day. And then I'd go home and eat flour and sugar with more flour and sugar with a side of flour and sugar and then go to bed. And if my husband didn't go and get me any flour and sugar after I asked him to, I would withhold affection, love, sex, And I would be pissed for at least 24 hours to 48 hours until he would then prove himself worthy of my love by getting me my binge food. And so that was an amends that I still make today. Like to this day, 23 years later, I'm like, okay, honey, would you mind blah, blah, blah. And then I will preface it by saying, it's okay if you don't want to. Like, it's okay. And now he's like, dude, I know you don't have to keep saying that, but I do because I want him to know that, you know, him helping me is completely voluntary and he's not obligated in any way. And that's part of what I've learned in this program. I've also learned how to communicate more with him. And we've actually needed some professional help to do that because we both grew up in alcoholic homes. And so communication skills were a lacking. We both lack them. 5 minutes. Thanks, Nana. And so I attribute my happiness in my marriage after being married 26 years now to this program. I would still be married because that's how we do things, but we would be miserable. I would be miserable. He would be miserable. We'd all be miserable. And I'm really clear about that. It's a miracle that I have two children. One, my oldest is 21 and my youngest just turned 16, and neither of whom have seen me compulsively overeat. And I have suited up and showed up in the good times and in the bad. And there have been some craptacular times as a parent over the years. Like we're talking sucktastic to the 10th degree. Although no one's been in jail. So that's sort of my bar. Like as long as you don't go to jail, I figured like I have arrived as a parent. But, you know, when things go down and I'm resentful at my kids, I write about it. Like, I don't just like sit there and not do anything. I do a 10th step about it. And then I call my sponsor about it. And then I talk about it. And then I'm like, oh, this is where I'm looking for them to validate me as a mother. And I feel like I failed as a mother if they, you know, behave in a certain way. But their behaviors are theirs. They're independent people and they're not thinking about me when they're behaving in a way that I am not even one iota of a thought in their head. And that is what I have learned in this program and in Lois's program, you know? And I'm grateful that I belong to both because it's really taught me how to realize that it's not about me. Shocker. It's not about me. And so I know I'm a little all over the place, but what I want to say is this program works if you work it. This program is for anybody and everyone who has the desire to stop eating compulsively. This program is not what we're eating. It's about what's eating us. And the steps are about recognizing that. And then the steps are helping us to recognize what is it about our character and what is it about my thinking that keeps me in a cycle of victimhood or resentment or fear. And then I have a higher power that I get to turn to and say, God, please release me of the bondage of myself so that I may better do your will and take away my difficulties that I may bear witness to those I would help of your love, your power and your way of life. I mean, and that doesn't mean, okay, wait, let's get clear. Do I get pissed off? Absolutely. Do I get resentful? Absolutely. Am I fearful? Yes. Yes, I am. Lost my keys, almost lost my shit. Did not lose it because I just kept turning it over. But, you know, every time I thought about each of the keys on the key ring and about what it represented and who I needed to go talk to about getting a new one, and then the key fob, and then I could go down the laundry list, and I was a nut job in less than an hour. And then I started praying about it, put it in my God box, wrote about it, went to my mom's house, asked her to pray about it. And then my daughter found my keys in her backpack. You know what I mean? Like, okay. You know, and so same thing with my youngest in grades. Thank you, Fiona. Like, first I'm like, they're his. May God be with him. I'm going to respond. He has to pass. But other than that, doesn't matter. I'm a type A-er. Like, I'm like A plus, A plus, A plus, A plus, A plus. If it's not an A, I'm pissed for myself. So it's weird having kids who just are so emotionally healthy that they don't need grades to decide their worth. They think they're awesome all by themselves. I'm like, I loved them too much. No, just kidding. And so I have to let them go and let go and let God. And that really it is my my continuous lesson. And we never arrive. There is no finish line. And there's always more room to grow. And that's what I love about Overeaters Anonymous. And you all have shown me that. And you all have been my teachers. And for that, I thank you from the bottom of my heart. Thank you so much for showing me the way. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.